This is the Mormon Mixed Faith Marriage Podcast with Certified Life Coach Brooke Booth, episode number 126. So today on the podcast, I have a guest named Samantha Conley. She's my sister. She's my sister, and we're going to talk about faith transitions. I've been promising to have more podcasts around faith transitions, and I'm going to do that now. We're going to talk about faith transition, about being in a mixed faith family, a little bit about self-development, and it should be a pretty interesting conversation. This should be good enough. It's a pretty good microphone. We're adjusting the microphone here. Okay. So we're going to have a conversation here. I'm going to ask you some questions and I'll add, as I always do, I can't help myself. Tell us a little bit about why did you leave? What was your faith transition about? And I want to talk about it in terms of like perspective. For some people, the reasons they leave initially are a little bit different than the reasons they land on later. What was your reasons? Where are you at now?
My questions started many years ago, largely around questions of sexism, racism, homophobia, ableism, just like these ideas of social justice, equity, and just like so many questions, like as time went on and I grew personally in this time, I was finding my personal beliefs and values just didn't align with what I was learning at church. And it was pretty jarring because, you know, I learned that that's like the ultimate place for knowledge and source and truth. And it was unraveling and becoming not so. And I finally got to the point where I just like couldn't endure the bad behavior of white men in charge anymore. And I was like, something's got to change. And I tried for a while to be the change within. And I realized it's not acceptable. As in like, I, as a single woman living where I was, I could never change the institution of the church, but what I could change was me, and I could change where I stood. Oops, that was my phone dropping. I could change where I stood. And so I chose to take myself out. So my values aligned with who I surrounded myself and what I supported.
So I'm realizing as you tell this, that like my story and your story are definitely intertwined.
We talked for hours about this. We walked step in step. We left within like weeks of each other.
Yeah. As you're saying this, I'm thinking back to like specific conversations where we would say things like, I don't think my values are in alignment with the values that the church is teaching. And like, I'm seeing issues with equality and I'm seeing issues with this. So just a little backstory. So we're sisters, but we're not like that close in age.
No.
We're like 7 years.
Yeah.
7 years apart. So while we grew up together, we didn't like grow up together. You were just little.
Yeah.
And I was probably just big.
Yeah.
And so our relationship has really been, I see it more as like an adult to adult relationship.
Oh, I agree. I don't think we were like became friends until after I had graduated from college.
Right. Right. Like, It's an interesting perspective because we're adult friends. We have similar backgrounds for sure. Just, you know, shared parentage and things. But I found like as we were talking, especially about like we were preparing lessons and so we were talking about these things. And
we were both teaching institute and being like, I don't like this lesson at all.
Mm-hmm. Or like, how do I teach this? It doesn't, like, I don't like this topic, and then we would make it work for us. I was just thinking about the dynamic of like being friends, adults working through a faith transition together. For me, it was a critical piece of like creating safety and comfort through the process.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's so scary to leave on your own, especially when you feel like you're leaving your family. Because mm-hmm. like your family's going to judge you. And what mm-hmm. are your parents going to think? And what are your siblings going to think? But Brooke and I walked through our years of a faith transition. We would go on trips together and talk about it. We would call on the phone. We didn't live together or close to each other, but we had so much communication about it. We would mm-hmm. send each other articles, would be mm-hmm. like, oh, let's try this. Have you thought about that? Mm-hmm. That it made it way less scary. And it didn't feel like it was going to explode my entire world.
Yeah, that's what I'm realizing.
I always knew that we would walk through it in some way together.
That's what I'm realizing. I'm like so similar as I'm sitting here and I'm reflecting on it. And I'm like, because she was my friend and my sister, it sort of gave me like two safe places to have this experience.
Yeah.
Like I knew I would have a family member and I knew I would have a friend, like whatever the chips fell, like however it all landed.
And I had a lot of friends going through faith transitions at the same time. And I left the church with a lot of friends, but it was invaluable to have a sister leading with me.
Yes, I agree. It's just, it's fascinating. I never really looked at it that way, but I'm like, oh, that was important.
So you asked me if my reasons had changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is no, they've only deepened.
Okay.
You know, like I've become more passionate about these reasons and it's become deeper. And I think more, it's been very honoring of me and my life's journey.
Mm-hmm. I see with some clients that like sometimes the initial reasons might be historical or, you know, they felt lied to, they felt like they didn't get the full picture. And then it develops sometimes into actually what we talk about, like not feeling like in alignment, not feeling like there can be integrity, like you can live in integrity and stay involved. And I'm not saying this is for everybody, but it's a pattern I see. And that's why I wanted to ask you. Let's talk about the experience of having a faith transition in a family where not everybody's having a faith transition. Like we both were.
But we were the only ones.
That we knew of at the time.
Yeah. Things have changed since that.
Yeah, that we knew of. This is so interesting to me.
I was very confrontational. I asked everybody. I was very...
What do you mean you asked everybody?
The siblings. I went on long campaigns trying to get other siblings out.
To have faith transition.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize this.
I shouldn't have. It wasn't my place. It was their place, but...
Didn't realize this.
I don't do that anymore. Bad behavior.
I didn't ask anybody or tell anybody anything because I was so afraid of like judgment. I should have told him. Anyway, judgment and like, I don't know, retaliation or...
Not everybody knew, but I mean, like most of the sisters knew.
Interesting.
But not your business, only mine.
Yeah, I was too scared to tell them. I did find out later that like Laura, I guess hers followed us, but not long after.
Oh, just like a year later.
Yeah, not long after. But what was that like for you? Like... What was it like? What is it still like being in a mixed faith family?
So I come from a different place than a lot of people as they leave the church. I'm single. I have always been single and I have zero plans to marry. So my mixed faith family is with siblings, with parents. And it's just taken, it just takes some negotiation and it has to be different with every person. So it's like honoring them and who they are, but honoring you and who you are and understanding what your capacity is. And so like I was telling Brooke this story earlier that I went to go visit my brother and his wife and their kids this summer. And it's like that thought of like, okay, so I'm going to, am I going to pack tank tops and short shorts or am I going to pack, you know, Mormon modest clothes to honor and respect them? Or, and you know, it's like this negotiation of what am I going to actually do for me? So I packed t-shirts and pants, one because it was cold and two because I didn't want to have the conversation. And so I ended up not doing it for their comfort, but I did it for my comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done opposite decisions and sometimes it feels affirming and sometimes it feels icky, and it's just like the process of going through that. So part of it is respect for them, but most of it is just honoring where I'm at in my life and my emotions.
And that can be hard to know. It can be hard to know, like
you have to fail a lot to figure it out.
Yeah, because there's this whole thing of like, okay, am I doing this just to keep them comfortable and so they don't judge me? And that doesn't feel good to a lot of people.
Because it doesn't.
Or am I doing it for me, but then like ignoring them or bulldozing them, that doesn't feel good either. I think it's a balance.
And I don't think it's something you learn in 6 months. I think like you're like the day you're like, okay, I'm done. And now I want it to be over with. Mm-hmm. Like we were baked in this. I mean, we grew up in a very devout Mormon family. And so like, it's the cake I was baked in from mm-hmm. every family home evening for as long as I can remember and every Sunday. Mm-hmm. So it just takes a long time and you just have to be patient with yourself.
I still find myself like deciding what I'm going to wear depending on who I'm going to see that day.
Oh, I do too.
No.
Yeah. I totally do. Sometimes I'll be like, oh, I'll see dad. And is it like, I have to be like, am I doing this? Cause I just don't want like, am I wearing this to make him uncomfortable? Cause sometimes mm-hmm. I like to push his buttons or am I trying to deflect it mm-hmm. or, you know, just like it's complicated and messy, but it's okay. Cause all of life is complicated and messy.
Yeah. I think that's part of it. Like you're not going to do it perfectly. You're just going to do it as you're going to do it.
Yeah. And you're going to make mistakes and people are going to get upset and it's going to.
Regardless. Like, yeah. Regardless of how well you manage it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, sometimes I'll even wear tank tops, if you will, when I want to show solidarity.
Right.
Yeah. It works both ways. Okay. This is a noisy podcast, but it is what it is. Okay, what about relationships with friends? Have you had many? Have you lost many? Have you gained many? Like, what's your experience? Start with friends who's still in the church, like believing friends. Did your relationship change, modify?
So, anything? I mean, when I went through my faith transition, I was finishing a degree, you know, moving, transitioning. So there's like, it's, you know, there's a lot of movement, a lot of natural transitions that just happen. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, in the town I lived in and the people I was going to church with, like nobody, a couple people still live there, but it was just a time of transition for mm-hmm. everybody. So it was, but it's something that's changed over time because everybody changes over time. Have some Mormon friends who are drifted. Yes, but that's probably just part of life. But some are just the same as ever. And it's just a lot about having mutual respect and understanding is I don't give them flack and grief for where they are. I'm not an ex-Mormon missionary. And so it's just the respect back and forth. You know, neither of us are trying. We don't have an agenda other than being friends.
I personally have found it harder to maintain friendships without church. Like without, I call it circumstantial friends, without being in the young women presidency with them, without like serving in primary together. I find it a lot more challenging to like have the consistency and the touching base.
It takes a lot of effort to maintain friendships.
Yeah.
It's a lot of text messages. You know, you fly out and visit them because a lot of them don't live local, make trips and plans. It's a very deliberate process. You know, and I have friends who are faithful. I have friends who are questioning. I have friends who left and I have friends who were never Mormon. And we all, you know, it's just everybody in between.
One thing I see with clients that I work with is a lot of times they have to redecide what friendship means.
Yeah. I mean, I think because of I was really young when I decided to never get married, which is pretty radical in the Mormon church.
Yeah.
I'm aware of this. It was not well received. And I just really held strong on that. And because I made that decision so young, I've always defined friendship a little bit differently.
I could see that.
Because okay. I have never been like looking for a life partner to fulfill all my needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always surrounded myself with stalwart and strong friends with the purpose of having lasting and longing relationships. So I've never had like a partner who's like my core partner mm-hmm. and then just had people here and there
like circle in and out.
I've had a lot of really strong core friends who I've had for years and years and who've remained core friends for years. But this when you build core friendships, it takes as much effort as a marriage relationship does, but we often That's actually a bigger challenge for my friendship, is people getting married and focusing so hard on a marriage that they forget they have friends than a faith transition is. And what usually happens with those friends is they'll like do 2 to 3 years. And then once they're married, they like realize they've lost their friends and they don't know who they are anymore. And then they come back and text me and they're like, hey, can we hang out again? Can we do something? Because it's your marriage can't be your everything.
Okay, this is so fascinating because I certainly grew up, went into marriage thinking it would be everything, thinking I didn't need friends. I didn't create, I've always watched you from afar. And I'm like, look at your friends and I look at what you create. And I'm like, fascinating, because it's foreign to me. Because I went into it like, I just need to get a husband and then he'll be my best friend. And I don't need other support. And it's a short change.
It is.
It's cutting myself off at the knees in many regards. And then I'm realizing that would make sense why my church friends were so circumstantial, because I was setting it up that way.
Yes.
I was like, you're a great friend to have while we're, you know, leading primary together, but that's good enough for me. I really did approach it that way.
Yeah. So then you're going to have a superficial friendship that if mm-hmm. you leave the circumstance, they're going to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because initially I would have wanted to blame that on like that all members of the church have circumstantial relationships because that's the kind of relationships they like perpetuate. But I'm realizing it's a bigger issue.
Yeah. And it's true. This, when I have this, it's true in and outside of the church, is this hyper focus on marriage being your everything for everybody, you know, and this being so focused is you lose yourself in the marriage.
Mm-hmm. It's putting marriage on a pedestal.
It is. And so you lose those core friendships, which are what carry you through life.
Which is,
they last longer than anything.
It's sad. It's sad because you can have a great marriage and great friends.
Yes.
They're not mutually exclusive.
And that you probably need both.
You probably need both. But of course, I never considered that until today, age 45. Lovely. Okay. What about friendships with people who've had faith transitions? Does that look different? It's probably not, just based on what you said, but.
So it depends on the friend. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're like one of like your core inside friends, and I have a core inside friends who've gone through faith transitions, you kind of, and we kind of did it at the same time. It kind of bonds you forever. Mm-hmm.
Trauma bonds.
Yeah. You're kind of like, we did this together. We won this together. You know, like.
I mean, like, look at us.
Look at us. Right? Yeah. And I've done that with other people, you know, where we have this kind of conversation. And then I've had friends who, you know, have gone through this process years later. And sometimes they'll just like text me and be like, hey, can I ask you a quick question? But they don't want to dig too deep. And they're like, or they'll like tell you, like, they'll be like, so I don't know about my temple recommend. And I, in those circumstances, because of early missteps I made with siblings where I was like, I should teach them all, you know, everything, that mm-hmm. I'll say like, well, this is what I did for me. How can I help you?
Yeah.
Instead of being like, oh yeah, you need to make a decision one way or the other and be fully committed. There's not like a preset outcome for any of this.
Or anything, really. I'm just sort of reflecting on my own experience here. And I'm thinking, do I have a friend who's gone through a faith transition? I have.
Yeah.
Yay for me. I'm just laughing because we do have a different friendship experience in life.
We do. Yeah.
We do.
And I was in the branch I was in. Well, most of us left together in some way or another. Well, I don't know if it's most, but many.
It's interesting. I'm thinking about this one friend in particular. And like, we didn't even talk about church stuff. Like, we were friends in another arena and she just happened to be LDS.
Yeah.
And then she started having this phase transition and she's like, could you help? And I'm like, happy to.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of proud of myself that I just have a friend. Okay, let's wrap up with one last question. I want to talk to you about personal development because it's something we talk about a ton. Like, before we had a faith transition, we called it eternal progression.
Yeah, enduring to the end.
Right, right. And so for me, personal development has changed a lot. It started as like, my visiting teaching statistics and how many times I went to the temple and like reading and praying on a daily basis. And it's really changed into something different, and then changed again, and then changed again, and then changed again. So tell me about what personal development looks like for you.
Yeah, I think it's easy, whatever that means, to be like, I can check all the boxes and I know I am perfect. You know, like, I had perfect visiting teaching, and I perfectly read my scriptures this
right,
month.
Right.
And it's, so for me, a lot of personal development has been letting go of complete control and tightness in my life, of just being like, I have to control everything that I do and everybody else does, so everybody can make it to heaven or whatever, you know, it's the missionary mindset. So a lot of it has just been, I have realized that because of the world we grow up in and the culture we grow up in, the church being part of that, I've learned a lot of very unhealthy coping techniques. I've learned a lot of like just really bad ideas. And it's just been like this slow process of learning new ideas, better ways of doing things. But it's been for me a very, it's not been instantaneous, and it's been slow, and it's been a series of making what I consider less bad steps. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I go from this to being like, you know, I went from being like, okay, I'm going to follow the prophet to, okay, I'm trying to deconstruct sexism, so I'm going to find a woman to listen to mm-hmm. being like, oh, I can be my own internal
authority
yeah. to, I don't need to even be my own internal authority because I don't believe in authority. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like this process of pulling out these concepts. And I imagine I'll be doing that for the rest of my life because it's a very long process, but it's been very rewarding at the same time.
Yeah, I have so many parallels to that. Like, this is what I did. I had this certainty of the church, and then I wanted to find something else to like find certainty in. Like, yeah. I was just like on a certainty kind of hunt, and like certainty in Heavenly Mother, certainty in like spiritualism or spiritual practices, or in another guru or teacher or prophet of some sort. And I did that for a while, like wanting somebody else to just tell me what to do and how to live and confirm that I'm making the right choices.
Yeah. You like part of what I was doing was deconstructed, like
authority,
morality. I spent a lot of time being like, okay, now what's moral and what's not moral, since I don't have like, you know, the For Strength of Youth pamphlet now. But then my next step after that was being like, well, I don't actually believe in morality because I believe in an internal and not an external judge mm-hmm. of who I am.
Yeah.
But that took, when I say years, I don't mean like that took 2 or 3 years. That took like 10 years.
Yeah.
And I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
Because I find myself falling back into old patterns because I learned them. I was very good at following rules.
Right. Neuroplasticity
takes time. My neuropathways mm-hmm. are super highways.
Mm-hmm. And they take time. I kind of see like layers that some people go through, like that I've worked with. You know, it's easy to deconstruct, like we were saying this earlier, it's easy to deconstruct polygamy or Book of Abraham stuff or First Vision historical accounts. I think that's really like low-hanging fruit, easy to deconstruct.
I don't want to like minimize how jarring that is when you deconstruct it.
Correct.
Because it's like, you know, it throws your whole world into Correct. A different view. Mm-hmm.
But it is one layer.
But that is, there is, once you start down mm-hmm. that path, it's, you have to be, I think you should be very careful not to end it there because it's very deep about what that has impacted in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, if we just take polygamy, you know, I can spend a half hour and be like, and read things and be like, okay, this is really not good, but it fails to account for the echoes of polygamy that are affecting us today mm-hmm. where we think like, oh, because I'm a man, I'm entitled to endless sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so because we don't do polygamy, my wife will give me endless sex.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a ghost of polygamy that we wrangle with on a daily basis still today.
Yeah.
And we have to deconstruct.
I call that like
now.
Well, I've heard it called, I shouldn't say, I'm not going to take credit for this, but I've heard it called like unwanted consensual sex. I think that happens a ton.
Yeah. That means it's not consensual.
Well, it's maybe a euphemism of sorts.
That's not consensual. You're spot on. I love what you're saying here because, or like, you know, it's down to like the things of like, you shouldn't say no to the boy when he asks you for a dance with you at a 14-year-old dance because we owe it to them.
Mm-hmm. Because that was so hard.
And they deserve a yes. Is so much harder to deconstruct because you don't even realize you've fallen into it.
Right. It's easy to be like, oh, versions of the first vision. And when we say easy, I mean like relatively. Like,
yeah, that's hard. It's super hard.
It's easier compared to deconstructing sexism
or racism.
Your own sexuality.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah. Do I
parenting know. These yeah. things? Yeah. It's and
heteronormativity.
Correct. Yeah. It's fascinating because I think that's one reason that I love deconstruction, because I'm kind of loving deconstruction.
I love it too.
Is that like, it just feels like they say removing layers, but it feels like every layer I remove, I'm just a little bit lighter. I have a little bit more space. I have a little bit more like choice. I feel like it's a little bit more expansive. I like that.
And I have found, as I've been working through this, that it's helpful to talk to siblings working through, like, Brooke and I text each other TikToks multiple times a day being like, hey, what do you think about this? Or just like, oh, I had this idea. I read this article. But I also have like gone through deconstruction. I had some friends who had grown up Catholic and they have their own, you know, baggage and work to do. And friends who grew up evangelical who've gone through processes, and they have been just as helpful to talk to because they see things in a very different, in like, it's like the same kind of ideas, but they just have seen different focuses. And so they'll be like, oh, I was thinking about this. And you're like, yeah, that is exactly the same thing. And so as I've deconstructed, I've listened to, you know, even evangelical podcasts and read books about other people leaving other faith transitions. And I have found that to be very valuable.
And you send them to me and I love them. And I was resistant at first. I'm like, yes, what does this have to do with me?
Yeah.
Right. And then, but as I like listen to like the evangelical TikToks, I'm like, oh, we're talking about the exact same thing.
And the town I grew up in, which was different than the town you grew up in, the one we didn't overlap in, was very evangelical. So like the school experience I had was evangelical, even though it was public school. Mm-hmm. And then the church experience I had, so I grew up as like a weird evangelical Mormon.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
But it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're even in my own like generation, which is funny because we're in the same generation, but in my own like strata of the generation, I was definitely in the period where like Mormons did not want to associate with evangelicals.
Oh no, same with me. No, no.
Yeah.
But
at the same time, we really, really did. But that's a whole different also, like, conversation.
Super similar. So if you're like, you know, looking to find like, oh, this isn't quite the right fit, try the evangelical world. They have so many good ideas.
They have great deconstruction ideas.
Yeah.
And that's really the main point here, is like, that has been so helpful to me as well, because they say it in just slightly a different way that sort of gets my brain to understand it in a deeper or different way that I find to be incredibly helpful.
Me too. And I wouldn't have found it unless I'd had friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Well, my current deconstruction is around marriage and deciding what I want marriage to mean. I realize when I use that term, it's like loaded. You know, when they talk about things with baggage, this has baggage for me. And that's what I'm currently working on. Like, I get to define it. What do I want it to mean? What do I don't want it to mean? It's like, I love deconstruction, and it's a little bit like lifting weights.
Oh, it's so much work, which is why you can't do it
24/7.
And you can't do it. Mm-hmm. I have to take breaks.
Yeah.
I have to go on vacation from deconstruction, because mm-hmm. you're deconstructing, I mean,
your identity, your belief systems, how you function and interact with the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like your point. Let's reemphasize that. You have to take breaks and you need support structure.
You know,
just like lifting weights, like you're not supposed to lift weights every single day.
No.
No.
You'll get injured.
You'll get injured.
And sometimes you have to, you know, when you have people deconstructing around you, and if they bring up a topic that's just super sensitive to you, you have to be willing to say, like, I can't talk about that with you right now. Maybe we can do it at a different time, or maybe that's a conversation you need to have with somebody else.
This is something we talked about earlier, and then we'll wrap up. Is we talked about this idea of being aware of your own bandwidth, like knowing your own limitations. Like, okay, it's a scripture. I'm going to quote it anyway, but like, don't run faster than you have strength. I think it really applies here.
Ugh.
I know. I quote scriptures all the time because they just pop into my head like that.
It's okay. It's how I quote scientific papers.
I read a paper once.
It's what I always
you
say.
You do. I've heard you say that. And I say, there's the scripture. I taught seminary for a long time. But there's kernels of truth in that. And yeah. And I think that applies in the relation, in the faith transition, in the relationship realm, and in the self-development realm of, like, this is not a race. Like, no. We're not rushing to get anywhere or be anything.
I'm not seeking perfection in this life to have in my calling and election made sure. You know, I'm not seeking that. There's no prize at the end of this.
Yeah, that's well put. Okay, we're going to wrap up, but this podcasting has been a little noisy, but enjoy the sounds of my house. And this is a faith transition one. So if you're in a mixed faith marriage and you're a believer, I should have told you at the beginning, skip it. This isn't for you.
Listen to it and hear somebody else's perspective.
Or listen to it and say like, okay, how can I like, what perspective is there for me to hear? Or can this help me understand my spouse and what they're experiencing? Because that's a beautiful thing to offer your spouse too.
Yeah. Or a friend or a child.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be your spouse.
Awesome.
Speaking as the person who will be single forever.
Yeah. All right. If you need help with your mixed faith marriage, if you need help navigating your difficult relationship, as always, go to my website, brookboothcoaching.com, and check out the free mini course I have. Grab it. It's for you to use and benefit from. All right. Wishing you the best.